I'm Daniel Levine, and this is the Bio Report. Funding levels, drug launches, and R&D success rates all grew in 2023, according to a new report from the IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science. Global funding of biopharmaceutical research and development increased to $72 billion, up from $61 billion in 2022. M&A activity jumped to $140 billion from $78 billion during the same period. We spoke to Murray Aitken, Executive Director of the IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science, about its global trends in R&D 2024 report, what he's watching, and why the new patent cliff for the industry will be less threatening than the last one. Murray, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you again.
We're going to talk about R&D trends in the biopharmaceutical industry, what you're seeing, and the new IQVIA Global Trends in R&D 2024 report. It's been an odd set of years with distortions from the COVID-19 pandemic and then a retrenchment in the biotech sector as many companies faced challenges raising money and took steps to cut spending to extend their cash runways. We're still below the peak R&D spending numbers we saw during the pandemic, but 2023 was an up year. What did you find?
So when we look at the level of activity, the level of funding, at the total sector level, I think what becomes clearer and clearer is that the years 2020 and 2021 were truly outlier years, exceptional years, bubble years, you might think of them as. And the further we get away from those 2 years, the more that we also see that we are essentially resuming the trajectory that we were on across many different measures leading up through 2019, to the eve of the pandemic. I think those outlier years are distinctive on at least two dimensions. One, clearly around the pandemic and the great rush to develop the vaccines and the therapeutics associated with COVID-19. So that was one major driver. At the same time, and somewhat related, of course, we had a surge of relatively free, quote-unquote, money coming into the system, much of which was attracted into life sciences, partly because of the excitement around new vaccines and therapeutics, but it definitely generated a huge surge of investment, early stage investment that started in those years. Those years are now 3-4 years behind us, and again, when we studied the 2023 data through the end of last year, we do see what we would call a bit of a reset, a resumption of the pre-pandemic trend lines. Of course, that doesn't come easily, and it's been a tough time for the early stage biotech sector, of course. But I think, again, if you take the long view, things are fine. We're just out of the shadow, if you like, of those exceptional years of 2020 and 2021.
There's been a lot of excitement around AI and machine learning and the potential to apply it to drug discovery and development. What are you seeing there?
Well, we certainly hear a lot about AI being used. We see a lot of, I think, very exciting potential on the drug discovery side of things. It's a little hard to track exactly how much is going on and what impact it's having. We have included in our R&D Trends report an exhibit that is tracking trials that involve assets that were originated from AI research companies. So these are ones that we know for sure sort of came out of an AI application. But it's a relatively small number. It's still, we're reporting about 30 trials started last year involving those assets that are coming out of these AI research companies. That's 30 out of about 5,000, trial starts. There's more than that that's going on. It's just a little hard to know exactly how much is happening, but certainly the excitement is there, the potential is there, and AI has many different potential applications, both on the discovery side as well as on the clinical development side as well.
I remember having a conversation with the head of drug discovery at a well-established biotech several years ago when the first AI drug developers came on the scene, and was really struck by how he was not just skeptical, but dismissive of the technology and its potential impacts. Have you seen attitudes in R&D change towards incorporating AI into what they do?
Well, yes. I mean, I don't think I see anyone who's dismissive of the potential impact of AI, particularly in discovery research. I think the sort of breakthroughs we've seen around protein folding and so on have really given everyone pause. And it's a recognition that there are some big steps forward that can be taken with the strength of AI capability. So I don't see anyone being dismissive of it. Of course, it can get overhyped. It can be overpromised. We've certainly seen that before, and I suspect there's some of that going on right now. But in terms of the potential impact, I think everyone there's a clear consensus now that that potential impact can be significant.
You've seen many new technologies come into the industry, all promising to accelerate drug development and reduce cost. Do you think AI is a technology that can actually deliver on that?
Well, I think it can, but many of these technologies, have that potential. It's a matter of how they are embraced and used in the context of the total development cycle of a drug. So we've seen other efforts to accelerate drug development, whether it be the use of real-world evidence, novel trial designs, decentralized trials, digital devices incorporated into trial design, and so on. And these are all good things to do, but they don't always result in a shortening of the time it takes to get a product launched. And part of the reason is because if it's a point solution, the savings that point solution delivers may be used up elsewhere in the development continuum. So you don't actually come to market faster. I think we also have a big hurdle to get over in terms of trusting the AI applications. At the end of the day, that trust is what is needed to translate what comes out of an AI system into a decision or an action that's actually taken by a person, that in order for the value of the AI to be realized. And I think there's a lot of discussion around exactly when can we trust AI and when can't we, and how do we know the difference. So there are definitely, there's many steps to go in terms of converting that potential value that AI can deliver into real demonstrated improvements in productivity. And I say the same about all the other, shiny objects that have come along over the last 10 years. And again, that have delivered to a greater or lesser extent their full promise.
M&A activity has been a critical driver for creating investor interest in the sector. We did see a jump in total deal values last year. What did you see there?
Yeah, so we did see the deal value increase in 2023, particularly in the back half. You know, ultimately, this is about a meeting of the minds about value of assets between a buyer and a seller. And there's lots of factors that go into how that value is arrived at by both parties and whether, in fact, there's a meeting of the minds or not. I think as we came through the back end of 2023, to some extent, with a promise of some macroeconomic improvement, we definitely saw a lift in activity, and I would say a change in sentiment that became much more positive towards M&A. And I think it was sort of noticeable that we saw a lot of deals announced in December 2023 that, you know, perhaps in prior times would have been announced in that first week of January, you know, when JP Morgan convenes. But we saw that actually come through earlier than that. So, and I think that's a reflection of the what seems to have been a change in sentiment. And sentiment does drive behavior in the M&A realm.
While there was a pickup in total deal value, there was a dip for the second time in a row on median deal values. Is that anything to be concerned about?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think size really matters sort of when you're looking at specific transactions. You know, and that can, you know, the rise or fall can be attributed to a lot of different factors. So, frankly, we don't put a lot of focus on that median value, you know, going up a bit or going down a bit.
In any given year, you tend to see some themes emerge. The activity around antibody drug conjugates really stood out, thanks in part to Pfizer's acquisition of Seagen. That helped make it a big year for deals centered on antibody drug conjugates. How much activity was there around these therapies?
So indeed, the ADCs have become the sort of hot sector in oncology, it seems, in 2023. We took a look at all the deals announced with a value above $2 billion in 2023. There were 31 deals in total. ADCs, antibody drug conjugate deals, represented six of the 31 deals, and that six represents about half of the oncology deals that were over $2 billion each. So it was definitely a focus of a lot of attention, and I think we saw a number of the large oncology players, including Pfizer, as you mentioned, but also AbbVie, BMS, Daiichi Sankyo, you know, all entering into deals involving ADCs. So it has clearly become a hotbed of activity.
We are at the start of another patent cliff for the industry. Patents on products that generate some $200 billion a year in revenue are set to expire by 2030. How do you see this affecting R&D investment and M&A activity?
So we've seen patent cliffs before, and there's no doubt that when a company sees a sizable amount of its revenue potentially subject to competition from new entrants of generics or biosimilars, there's always a step up in the deal activity. You know, we saw that back 10, 15 years ago, around the time of the last big patent cliff. The difference, by the way, is back then, and I've been around long enough to remember that, there was this sort of existential question of whether the pipeline was, whether the well was running dry, right? Whether there were any deals to be had. We're in a very different situation today with a pipeline that is full with, you know, clinical trial activity, certainly at the sort of pre-pandemic level. Again, we've had that blip in the last few years, but there are plenty of assets to help fill the pipeline of companies that need some incremental revenue to offset their patent expiries. So I imagine we are going to see, you know, a sustained level of increased activity as companies, you know, that are some of them are facing sort of 40% or more of their revenue facing patent expiry over the next 5 years or so. They will be busy replenishing their pipeline, that's for sure.
We did see a drop in clinical trial starts last year. How big a drop was there, and any sense what it reflects?
So we do a lot of analysis using Sightline Trial Trove, which is a third-party excellent source of data. We add a lot of analytics on top of the raw data there. And we track, in particular, announced or actual trial starts. In 2023, that number was down about 15% from 2021. And that was down about 22%. The 2023 starts were down about 22% from the starts in 2021. So we've had a sizable decline in the number. The drivers are threefold essentially. One is fewer starts in COVID-19 vaccines or therapeutics. There are still some even in 2023, but the numbers are well down from what they were a couple of years earlier. The second area, about a third of the reduction comes from fewer starts by what we call emerging biopharma companies. These are the startups that are spending less than $200 million a year estimated on R&D. We saw, in particular, a pullback in the number of phase one starts by those companies. And again, that's a consequence of the of some of the difficulties in financing that these companies have faced in the last couple of years. And then the last third of the reduction really comes from fewer trial starts by larger companies. And a lot of that we see around a decrease in sort of multi-study clinical programs. And some of that is just a consequence of shifts in the portfolio. You know, we've come through a period where a drug like Keytruda, you know, would have dozens of trial starts each year. You know, as a drug like that is now, you know, 10 years in the market or so, you know, we don't see quite as much activity around that. And we haven't seen as many other sort of backbone drugs, if you like, come through in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years that would also precipitate these very large numbers of trial start. So that's another dynamic that's a little bit different. You know, the hotspots have moved on. You know, they are in some different areas now. But that's been another driver of that reduction over the last couple of years in trial starts.
Rare disease trials remained high and slowed less than trials focused on larger populations. Do you think that's been affected less?
Yeah, so we do see still a lot of rare disease trial activity. A lot of it is in oncology, and you know, as I think it's well recognized now, oncology is becoming increasingly a series of rare diseases as we get to define cancer in more precise ways. So that therefore means there are more drugs in development going after those smaller slices of the oncology disease area. So oncology rare disease development remains very active. We also know that historically rare diseases have had higher success rates, and I think that's always been one of the reasons that they have been attractive to sponsors in support. Plus, their time to market can be shortened by some of the accelerated pathways available from the FDA. So, rare diseases remains an attractive area and a very active area for clinical trial activity.
The GLP-1 drugs were a big market success in 2023, and there was a spike in clinical trial activity around obesity. What did you see there?
Yes, so certainly, you know, as I've been saying for a while, I'm sure every board has asked their CEO, where's their GLP-1 or where's their anti-obesity medicine? And we have seen a very steep increase in the number of trials starting in 2023 for obesity. We took a look at the total pipeline of molecules that we see in active clinical development programs. We could find 124 as of the end of last year. What's notable is there is a fair amount of diversity among those molecules. About a third of them are the GIP-GLP glucagon receptor agonists, similar to the mechanisms that are already in the market. But then 65% are other mechanisms. So we've got a widening array of mechanisms being pursued in these oncology trials. We also note that almost half of the molecules in active clinical development are oral formulations. And I think that's also a sign of where things are going away from the injectables. But a huge amount of activity, very exciting results coming through in some of the phase two trials. We've got about 8 molecules in phase three, another 50 or so in phase two. This is going to be a very active area for some time and a very exciting one with potentially a very consequential impact on patients and on our healthcare system.
One other area that's been very hot in clinical development has been the area of cell and gene therapies. What have you seen there?
Yeah, so we continue to see a lot of activity there. About 600 trials started in total. About two-thirds of those are industry-sponsored trials, a third non-industry-sponsored trials. That's in 2023. So, you know, a large amount of activity. CAR-Ts are still being pursued. We noted in our report that back in 10 years ago in 2013, there were 4 trials started for CAR-T products. Over the past 3 years, there's been 150 trials started for CAR-Ts, but also gene therapies and gene editing clearly moving into a new phase. The approval of the sickle cell gene-edited cure, shall we say, in December, I think was a big step forward, gets everyone's attention, and we will see a lot more activity in and around cell and gene therapies for many years to come.
There's been a lot of talk in recent years about mental health. There's been interest in the use of psychedelics. There's also been an effort to bring precision medicine into mental health. Given all that, I was surprised to see you report depression trial starts were down in 2023. What happened there?
Yeah, so we were surprised also to see that decline, particularly as depression has gotten a lot more attention really since the beginning of the pandemic, and this recognition that we still have very significant unmet needs in this area really became more prominent. We were attributing the decline in 2023 in part to the significant number of trials that started in the prior couple of years. So we really saw an upswing in 2021 in particular, as well as 2022. And it could be this is a matter of the sort of timing of the sequence of programs that, the sort of the pipeline, if you like, got filled up with a lot of those starts in 21 and 22. Those trials are still continuing. And that may be a reason why we saw the drop off in 2023. Certainly psychedelics, though, haven't paused. And we did see that in 2023 of the trial starts for depression, psychedelics were being studied in nearly 40% of those trials. So this is definitely a hot area. A lot of attention being played here to see how those psychedelics will play out.
What are you seeing in terms of failure rates, and how is the industry doing with regards to R&D efficiency?
So we look at success rates really across the industry, and we calculate what we call a composite success rate. So just to explain what that is, we look in 2023 at drugs that progressed from phase one to phase two, and we calculate a success rate for that cohort. Then we look at ones that progressed in 2023 from phase two to phase three, calculate a success rate for that cohort, and so on. And then we multiply those success rates through to get a composite 2023 success rate across all stages. That success rate was 10.8% in 2023. That's the highest it's been since 2018. It compares to 5.9% in 2022, and it compares to 7.6% as the average over the past 10 years. So we definitely saw a tick up in the success rate, particularly in phase three trials. Phase two was fairly flat. Phase one was up a bit, and the success rate for drugs being submitted for regulatory approval also ticked up. So this is a good news story. It's always a little hard to put your finger on exactly why that is, and we're always cautious not to overinterpret sort of a single good year. But I think, you know, across the industry, there have been a lot of efforts underway to try to bring that success rate up, because it had been declining for several years. Of course, one way you bring the success rate up is by taking less risk. And it may be that there's been a little bit of a pullback in the assessment of risk for a new development program behind a molecule, right? That would result in a higher success rate. But I think we need to wait, you know, another couple of years to see if, in fact, this improvement endures, and whether we can, you know, really have a better explanation, really, of what has turned that around. Certainly, everyone's trying to achieve greater productivity. There's a lot of efforts going in to achieve that. But we want to wait a little bit while before we can declare victory, if you like.
As we get deeper into 2024, what are you watching here?
So in 2024, we're continuing to watch the financing and the strength of the emerging biopharma cohort. You know, those companies account for almost 70% of the pipeline. Many of them are still in a precarious financial position. So how that plays out, the extent to which we'll see more deals done, rescue deals perhaps, or mergers between smaller companies. So it's not just a large company taking or partnering with a smaller one, but even smaller ones partnering themselves. I think that dynamic is one that we want to be watching fairly closely. The other dynamic that we're paying a lot of attention to is what's happening in China. China has become a powerhouse of life sciences innovation in only the last 5 years. That innovation is in many cases now making its way outside of China to the rest of the world. And that's another area that we're looking at much more closely and we'll be reporting out on later in the year.
Global Trends in R&D 2024, Activity, Productivity, and Enablers can be found on the IQVIA website under the Insights tab. Murray Aitken, Executive Director of the IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science. Murray, thanks as always.
You're very welcome. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks for listening. The Bio Report is a production of the Levine Media Group. To automatically download this podcast each week, subscribe to our RSS feed or through iTunes or other podcast manager. To join our mailing list, go to levinemediagroup.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to drop us a line or are interested in sponsoring this podcast, send email to danny@levinemediagroup.com. Special thanks to Jonah Levine, who composed our theme music, and the Jonah Levine Collective, which performs it.